Super Gamecast 64, episode 99. It's the best of 2017, guys. We have over a dozen categories of all sorts of different games that are great this year, stuff that was awesome. But this is Super Gamecast 64. It's a comedy show.
Sorry, what was that?
Super Gamecast 64. It's a comedy show. It's also a video game show. If you don't laugh, you're a sociopath.
I'm your hat, Mario.
I'm your host, Matt. With me, as always,
It's
me, Kevin.
And
I'm actually your pants.
And who's over there? Who's my shirt?
Your undies.
Me undies.
We're not supposed to be undies.
I'm Tyler.
Okay, guys. So usually we have a preamble, but there's just so much stuff to talk about. We have a bunch of lists. Without further ado, let's just pick one of these and go for it. You guys want to do...
Sandbag it. No.
We're not going to start with a bummer.
Start with the bullshit.
Here's what we'll do. So, there was a lot of full games that came out this year, but games are a continuing service. You guys know, like Overwatch, they have the game release, but then new content as the game progresses throughout its life cycle. A lot of games got some pretty great expansions this year. And to write them off because they were last year's releases would be unfair. So let's start with best expansion of 2017. Kevin, do you want to read the nominees for us?
Yeah, sure, I'll do that. But I first wanted to say that I would argue that sometimes making a good expansion might be harder than releasing a full game.
I agree.
You're compounding on something that already exists, and you're trying to make it better. So if you already had a good game to begin with, you just have more to deliver. So without further ad, dudes, like you said.
Yeah.
We have Warframe, the Plains of Eidolon expansion, Destiny 2, Curse of Osiris, GTA's online category. We're really just lumping everything together.
There is a lot of stuff.
There were a couple of releases. The Breath of the Wild, the Hero's Path, I think, was the first one, and then there were two total, I believe.
So the two Breath of the Wild ones.
The Horizon Zero Dawn Frostland expansion, Trostland is from PUBG, I'm pretty sure.
All right, let's just call this Horizon Zero Dawn DLC.
Then there's the Forza Horizon Zero Dawn 3 Hot Wheels.
That's Forza Horizon 3's Hot Wheels expansion. Tyler, do you have anything you wanted to add?
You're really cruel for putting those two, right?
Horizon Zero Dawn, the Frozen Wilds.
I like the Forza Zero Dawn Hot Wheels. Frostland.
I mean, that's a good... What'd you
Frost
say it was
wheels.
Called?
For Horizon?
Yeah. Stop, guys. Oh my god, we'll never get through this. We're already minutes in.
We're just trying to goof it.
Yeah. Horizon Zero Dawn, the what?
The Frostlands.
The Frostlands. Okay, Tyler, do you have anything you wanted to add to this list? Or anything you wanted to say before we
I gotta finish a game to get to DLC. I can't really talk about...
Dude, for real.
That's
though.
Fine. Alright. Let's start this way. Let's just talk about Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris real quick, because me and Kevin did a whole article on it, and we ended up giving it a 6.5.
Yeah.
Now,
it was a solid expansion, but it was nothing to write home about.
Here's what I wonder about, because Kevin's right. A lot of times you have a solid game that's released 1 year, this case Destiny 2 released 2017, and then you release DLC, and DLC is supposed to bring people back into the fold. Now, Tyler, you did not play Curse of Osiris. Is that right?
That is correct.
Now, the reason being because you felt that the DLC wasn't going to offer you any more, or that you were just done with Destiny 2 at that point? Because those are valid points against it. A DLC is supposed to reignite the love you have for a series. And in this case...
And they planted the seed real early, because without any spoilers, there was a post-credit scene in Destiny 2 that did tease Curse of Osiris.
Yeah, so that's like the next reasonable thing you'd want to get to. Tyler, you felt that you would... What were your feelings on it? Why did not you hop back on board? Why didn't you?
When I finished it and I got myself to that 298 light level, I... doing the raid... any number of times... More than 12.
Yeah.
Is too many.
That's, that'll come up definitely.
Hold on. for one night.
you bring up a good point, is that the Destiny 2 content was fine. It was the raid content that just made me almost hate that game. Go ahead.
Counterpoint. Get good.
But okay, but let's keep...
No, I'm just kidding. I was there with you for all 12 of those.
It was rough. The problem was that it wasn't get good. It was get lucky. But that's...
Get better friends, apparently.
That's Destiny 2 normal. Curse of Osiris, I think, as its own...
There were a lot of glitches in that raid, and furthermore in the Osiris stuff, so...
I think the best part of it was the raid lair, because it was better than the original raid, but when you take just the normal story content, and even the stuff they unlocked of the gear and all the stuff you would get, it just felt a little bit, you know, half-baked.
It felt underwhelming. The more notable things were the jumping puzzle in the new raid lair. That was fun.
Yeah.
Then I really also like the masterwork weapons. Those are really cool.
Let me ask you something. Would you buy a DLC for a jumping puzzle?
No. And that's a very good point. In relation to other things on this list and what they bring and how they change the gameplay, like in Breath of the Wild, that kind of stuff changes the fundamental gameplay versus the main story. I think Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris is just a little bit more of the same, and it's not even that good of the same.
It's basically more content, but they did wrap it up in a very pretty wrapper.
It's a very pretty game. If this was best graphics,
correct,
then maybe Destiny 2 would be a shoehorn in.
Correct.
I think we're all fine with cutting this right
now.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
Okay. Destiny 2 Curse of Osiris, sorry, you are still a 6.
More like Curse of Obiris.
All right. Just so you guys understand, because we jumped right into this, the way we do our stuff is that we have our nominees, we're going to have one winner and one runner-up, except for in the Game of the Year categories, the overall, and maybe the indie will do a top three. Normally it's just one winner, one runner-up, but 2017 was so crazy that we need to at least acknowledge more than one in two games for being the best of the year.
And it's also worth noting that some of us are already at a consensus for some of these categories, so there may be some that are longer than others. Whereas in some categories, we will need to convince one another so that we can come to a conclusion. There are some where it is unanimous already. So,
and the point being is that not everyone here has played all these games. So a lot of this stuff, when we get into the later talk, will be who is won over by the best argument.
Yes.
Who can articulate what the game did for them the best. And with that being said, Warframe, Planes of, how do you say it?
Eidolon.
I have seen my friends play Warframe. I have talked to our good friend Josh about Warframe many a car rides. He is very into that game. He's explained the whole thing to me and doesn't come off as something I would like, but I know you two would like those systems a lot, and you do. So this is that chance. Convince me why Warframe is something that should be either one or two on this list. Without me playing it, y'all... convince me, because when we're talking about Breath of the Wild and even things that GTA 5 Online, which I have not played, have done, mm-hmm. I know how they impacted everybody who played that. With me having almost zilch knowledge on Warframe besides what people have said, what makes the Planes expansion improve? What did it do that Curse of Osiris failed at? It's also an FTP, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah, just
Warframe,
go.
Warframe, you don't need to pay to play. You don't need to do... They give you enough of their premium currency outright. You don't have to earn it in order to play the game for what feels like 80 hours of grind. Now, that's what this game is. It's a third-person action adventure.
It's a weird sci-fi kind of thing.
It is. You play robot ninjas.
It's a shooter.
It's a shooter. Yeah, it's a third-person shooter. It's real close over the shoulder, like Gears perspective.
Yeah.
It doesn't play like Gears.
No.
You got some melee weapons and stuff, if I remember.
Yeah, everyone is equipped with a melee, a primary, and a secondary.
I would go so far as to say it's somewhat twitchy in control scheme.
I agree.
What did the DLC itself bring? Was it more zones? Was it a new quest line?
The DLC dropped not only new quest lines, but... somewhat of a social zone mm-hmm. that expanded okay. upon the end game.
Yes.
Where you will fight these big behemoth creatures known as Eidolons, right? If I'm not mistaken, I never got that far. So
I don't know that there are more than one.
Ah, so it may just be one. But it opened up this really cool, huge social zone that people can play on.
I'll tell you what, this game is not kind to new players.
No.
This end game content is not kind to... Well, and new players whatsoever.
The game itself doesn't have a really great tutorial.
Right. Okay, go.
Yeah.
Now press buttons. Okay, go.
Do you guys think it hangs? Because I am not... You guys had a lot of... You guys liked it a lot. Where I can see... Because this is not a list that is what are the objective best things.
Right,
this
right.
is what we liked the most.
Right.
And I think that in that mindset, with what we what the other noms we have on this list, you guys liked this enough. You tell me, though, did you guys like Warframe or did you like the DLC stuff enough? Is this a way to pop Warframe on the list or does the DLC really earn its spot?
My context for this is this was great DLC for a free-to-play game.
Which is hard to do.
Yes. I agree.
Yes.
I say we leave it for now.
All right. That's fair.
Yeah.
And I say the next thing we bring up is... Yeah, by the way, real quick, some of this stuff, just by the nature of it, most specifically things like best story-driven game, those will have potential spoilers. Now, we're not going to just throw out all spoilers.
Right.
We will avoid if possible. But there are some instances where sometimes the spoilers make the game, specifically with things like Wolfenstein 2. A lot of that stuff is spoilery, and we will give you fair warning. And even for people around here, I know you haven't finished Super Mario, nor have you.
Or you have.
Yeah. Okay, so there's stuff at the end of Mario I wouldn't want you to hear because it might ruin it. So, you know, there are instances where even people in this room can take a step out, but we will give you fair warning. Just know that there is some spoilery stuff. So if you hear any of these nominees and you're like, oh, I wanted to finish that, best bet might be to skip that category, or when we start talking about it, skip a minute or two ahead. Just letting you guys know, but we will denote when that happens. As we hit like 10 minutes here, Breath of the Wild. I played Breath of the Wild. We'll talk about this when we get to overall game of the year. I was a teeny bit lukewarm on it, and I also didn't own a Switch, so I didn't have the way to get to the DLC and play through it. But judging off what I've heard from my younger brother, who's super into Zelda, he said he much prefers the second, more difficult expansion than the first one. But having not played either of them, I can't speak on its merits. Have either of you played any of this to a point where you feel like strongly about leaving it up here?
No.
I haven't. I have not experienced it. I went back to Breath of the Wild on Switch after having played it on Wii U, and it was already very difficult for whatever reason.
Yeah. And this is the thing that we're going to come to, is that objectively, yes, I understand that Breath of the Wild DLC might be some of the best DLC, but if none of us played it and we can't really speak to it, and we have things like Warframe that you guys played for hours and hours, it would be very unfair to award something that we haven't played
the
over something we
did. Other caveat I'd like to make is that a good expansion creates more of the game to love. I feel like Breath of the Wild just kind of upped the difficulty.
The first one specifically,
and added some nostalgic things. While that is great, and I do appreciate the merit of that, I don't think that makes a great expansion.
And I agree with that. Like I said, I think the first one, specifically what my little brother Dan said, maybe if he comes around at some point during our recording, he can speak on some of these other games. But he said the first one, just like what you said, it was a hard mode, it added a few chests. And the second one, it does weird things in how it strips you away of your armor, and it in certain things, it gives you like a different path to follow with these shrines. But it is still going to do shrines. It's nothing brand new. It's not new zones as far as I have come to understand. So as long as everyone's okay with this, I am deleting Breath of the Wild content off of this list. And there it goes. Horizon Zero Dawn, The Frostlands. I think this is another thing similar to Breath of the Wild where I played Horizon Zero Dawn and loved it. I believe I gave it a 9.5. One of the things I said to myself is, I finish it for review, I can't wait to get back into it, and then I saw the DLC came out, and I was like, wow, I really want to play that, but it never drew me in. Now, that is nothing against the DLC itself, but like we said with Curse of Osiris, it's something that's supposed to draw you in. I know that you didn't, Kevin, play Horizon.
I have not gotten a chance to play Horizon.
Did Tyler, from any of the things that you saw...
I'll tell you what, Horizon just didn't put its hooks in me fast enough. I couldn't play enough of it to get even close.
So I think maybe just the idea of nominating the DLC. It's good to bring up because I think the DLC, The Frostlands, was well received. And I think it deserves a nod in that respect.
Absolutely. I can understand the cultural significance of this DLC, but it meant nothing to me because I haven't played the original game.
So I'm going to remove this from the list. Horizon Zero Dawn is a great game that is not getting as recognized as I hoped it would be. But then again, I wrote these nominees as you guys did as well. So I just wanted to give it a nod there. We are down to our final three. We have to knock one off this list, and I think I know which one it's going to be.
Let's talk about Hot Wheels.
Fuck off. No way, dude. I will go to the stake for Hot Wheels. You guys play way more Grand Theft Auto than I. In fact, you guys play Grand Theft Auto Online. I have merely played it. There is a difference. Tell me what they did, because here's the thing, too. All the GTA 5 Online expansions were free.
So, remember how I contextualized the Plains of Eidolon expansion by saying it's good for a free-to-play?
Yeah.
GTA expansions are good for a pay-to-play game.
It's the flip side of it.
It is insane how much content they add in these things in terms of gameplay.
And they're still coming out. I saw one for GTA Online Slashers? Is that something I just saw?
Wow.
That is on the heels of another update that only came out 1 or 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. That was, they recently started adding more planes to the lineup, based on heists and missions that you can do. And the beauty of it is, on one hand, you need a small group to do heists, although you can do matchmaking, to fire up your motorcycle club or your SecuroServe company. You just need a couple people. You run a couple missions. You try things out. You get to experience a new DLC. They do a really great job of integrating it into existing gameplay without making you feel like you are being spoon-fed the content.
I think the GTA 5 Online stuff does exactly what I was saying, is that it doesn't take an existing game and just add stuff onto it. It changes the way you play the game fundamentally. A lot of these patches have changed the world building, the way that people interact with GTA Online itself. I remember the motorcycle one came out, and it changed the way that people were buying property within the game because of where those icons had populated and where those different things of the DLC had populated. Tyler, what were your overall thoughts as GTA 5 Online? Because you crossed me as somebody who would not play as much as you did.
You're right, Matt.
So what was it about GTA 5 Online that drew you into the point it did?
So I'm like Kevin when it comes to games. I prefer to play with my friends.
Yeah.
I don't play GTA because the whole style doesn't really, it's not something I do. I don't really like a third person real world shooter where you can do, but where you can, like,
you're the crime
drug lord.
Yeah, that's not exactly your bag.
No, but when it comes right down to it, I'm a minion.
You like...
I will do what you tell me to do.
I have to tell you, Tyler and I and the group that we play with have had absurd amounts of fun with GTA 5 Online.
Yep.
I mean, there were so many sessions. I don't think I've ever done so little in terms of progress in a video game, yet had so much fun. And talking about it now is making me dying to play it right now.
I'll tell you what. I think the driving factor is having a decisive player.
Yeah. I mean, all you need is one person to go, all right, this is what we're doing. And then literally everyone else becomes a minion. And that is just, that's fun. It's fun to be a henchman. You just ride on the back of somebody's motorcycle, whip out your Uzi and, you know, shoot up a drug lord or something. I don't know. There's just something like really fun about just dicking around. We had this one friend who, he would grief us when we were playing together. Which was so annoying, but even as annoying as it was still so much fun because then it would set off this like 40-minute debacle of us trying to shoot his jet out of the sky from like our supercars.
I think this is why I specifically bought a targeting RPG was because of this person. And I'm just like, no, I'm done with you. I'm absolutely sick of this. Put me on the back of a motorcycle. Let's go. And I would take this guy out. Whenever I saw him, you were my target.
I think both Warframe and GTA 5 Online have done similar things for you guys. Mm-hmm. I just want to make my case for Forza. Forza Horizon 3.
You get to drive plastic cars.
Hold on.
Okay.
Forza Horizon 3 takes the best arcade racing game in most recent knowledge. Let's just look at every arcade racer that's come out. Need for Speed Payback. The Crew 1. I mean, it has its merits, and that was like 2 years ago. But Forza Horizon has been the leading franchise, not only in arcade racing, but also open world racing. And what I think people were used to in Forza Horizon 3 specifically was driving across these big fields, these big mountainous terrains, and the two DLCs that came out, Blizzard Mountain and Hot Wheels, both did two things very differently. Blizzard Mountain put you on a mountain with nothing but snow, and what Hot Wheels did is Hot Wheels put you on two or three connected islands that they have those big orange Hot Wheel tracks, and then it's the T-Rex, the dino version of that. So you have like big animatronic T-Rexes that pop up. And what it did is it took a game that is somewhat based in reality. Well, it is based in reality. The normal game takes place in Australia. And then you have all these huge souped up cars that you've used. Like I had this Lambo. And you take that and you put it literally in a Hot Wheels environment. And not only does it change the dynamic of the game, it changes the dynamic of how you're driving. Now you're driving on loop-de-loops, and if you're not going fast enough, you can fall off. And you can fall all the way into the water. There's these huge, huge ramps that you hit that make you go faster than you've ever gone in Forza. I mean, the only
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The only knock I would give it is that it is a lot of, you know, Hot Wheels loop tracks and stuff, whereas Forza Horizon 3 embraces the open world, so it is more track-based, I guess, than But as far as DLCs go, I'm talking about Forza Horizon 3 that came out last year or two years ago. I don't own the game, but I played it for 5 minutes, the Hot Wheels expansion. I've played a lot of the normal game at my buddy's house, and I said, hey, I'm probably going to beat this here. And then over the course of 2 months, every time I got a chance, I played Hot Wheels, and I cannot think of any other DLC that has brought me back to a game I don't even own time and time again, and there was several times when Forza was on sale that I was going to purchase the main game only so I could play the Hot Wheels DLC. And for other people I know who played it, Hot Wheels is the reason they continuously return to it, because it takes something and it just amps up the fun to a level that was never there before.
My burning question.
Yes.
Can you drive a track through like a backyard setting and jump a pool and a barbecue and get chased by a dog and...
No, it all takes place on like T-Rex Island or something.
Too bad.
So it's a lot of cool Hot Wheel stuff.
Forza can have that idea for free if they want.
It's backyard. I just think that all things considered, Warframe and GTA 5 online stuff... continue an online thing. It's going to give you... I think GTA changes things more than Warframe did, so I think GTA has a leg up in that situation, just hearing what you guys said. But I think Forza Horizon 3 still deserves at least the runner-up position doing what it did for a single-player game, mainly.
I would definitely be cool with giving it runner-up. The only reason and the biggest argument I have for GTA is that a lot of people consider it to be a completely separate game from GTA 5.
Oh,
even though it
that.
Is an online game, the content that they've built into that online game, I mean, they've created an entire another story, another narrative that includes literally your player-created character.
It's a whole different thing, yeah.
So,
and it's very well done.
While I agree with your argument based on Warframe, in that it's an online game, it's an expansion of something that already existed, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's not a single player expansion.
Yes.
You know, single player centric. I would argue that that doesn't apply to GTA, and therefore that would be why I would pick GTA over Forza. But I would be comfortable giving Forza a runner-up spot.
I guess then the real question is Tyler, are you okay with giving Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels the runner-up? If that means losing either Warframe, because I think that's where it sits right now. You're all right with that?
Yeah, Warframe is good. Believe me, Warframe is good for what it does for the amount of money it doesn't try to take from you.
Exactly.
It is a well built and polished game. The servers are not good, or a lot of people play those games.
Load times hurt too.
Well, yeah. And it's a free to play game, so you're also dealing with what they can do server wise. Yep. So is this GTA 5 online expansion's win and Forza Horizon 3 is the runner-up?
I'm comfortable saying that, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I am deleting Warframe. Warframe, I got to give you props because this is a game that I saw many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a long time, and to hear people getting into it from a newer perspective just now, people being able to jump on, I think that shows that they're supporting their game in a way I didn't think they were going to.
Especially in a year with so many good games.
Yeah, that too.
For it to have drawn us in, and for them to have dropped an expansion, a free-to-play expansion, the year of 2017, which was some of the best games we've seen in the modern era, I would argue. That's ballsy, and they hung. They can hang. They've proven it.
So best expansion of 2017 goes to GTA 4 Online's multiple free updates. It's way too good. And then the runner-up is Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels. Well-earned. That was a 25-minute category. Oh, shit. You guys want to... You know what? I think we can get through this one much quicker. Best RPG?
Huh.
Or do you guys want to do biggest disappointment?
No. Best RPG.
Tyler, you should read the noms.
Yeah, so best RPG, once again, one winner, one runner-up. A packed year. Definitely some good RPGs. Some of these ones on this list I don't think will hang against the other ones.
I agree.
But they all have their merits. Tyler, best role-playing game 2017. What are our noms?
Persona 5. South Park. How am I supposed to say this? Fractured Butthole.
Yep.
Fractured Butthole.
Elder Scrolls Online. Morrowind. Divinity. Original Sin 2. Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. Now, Matt.
Yes.
I don't know why there are more than one option on here.
You don't know why Persona 5 isn't winning.
I don't know why Persona 5 hasn't already won and blown the rest away.
It is on the top. It's the first one you listed.
Because that's where I put it.
Let's do this because I'm pretty sure Tyler is dead fucking right.
Yeah.
I think Persona 5 is going to be the runaway in this mm-hmm. category. I think the thing is... is the runner-up.
I really can't make an argument for anything but Persona just based on what I've heard. I haven't played
Persona. So you know what? Let's treat this category more like a celebration of the RPGs because yeah. RPGs are often... they're just like, you know, that genre no one really pays attention to.
They're kind of a dying breed.
And if it is, it's usually like some crossover genre. Like even The Witcher 3 isn't a straight RPG. It's an open world action event, you know, like.
Yeah, okay. So just like Breath of the Wild is an RPG.
Let's put it this way.
Adventure.
Exactly.
Right. Classic style RPG. You know what I mean? Like, because you could really define anything as an RPG. Technically, Hitman could be defined as
an RPG.
They do
have RPG elements, yes.
You know what I mean?
So, like. We should definitely celebrate this. Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. We played a lot of Sun and Moon. Yep. It was in our best 3DS category. I'm pretty sure it won or at least got runner-up. I'm glad they did an Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. I just think that for their send-off, because this is their like last one on 3DS, they probably could have done, you know, I don't know, maybe a full remake of Blue or Red.
Yeah,
Did you play it?
No.
Did you play it?
Nope.
I didn't play it. There was no draw.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Like, yeah, props on them, because they did make a brand new story and in new Pokemon.
But they released it so close to the original one, I had no desire to buy it.
They did a bad job selling that it is a different game. I thought it was
the same game, until just now.
So, you know what, props to them, because it is a good Pokemon game. From everything I've heard, it is a good Pokemon game, especially if you liked Sun and Moon on a base, you know, Alola and all that shit. But definitely against these other ones, not going to make, as Kevin does the Alola sign.
Matt, I want to know about this South Park game.
South Park was good.
South Park Fractured Butthole.
Was it as good as Stick of Truth?
That's a thing. Is it two different games? Stick of Truth
Very
was the one
games.
Where they were like, we've never made a South Park game where we replicate the style this well, where we can actually do these bits. It looks just like the cartoon. So Stick of Truth was like a grab bag of South Park nostalgia.
Yeah.
And it was just tied together with this fantasy storyline. Like you already
Knock
saw.
Off WoW.
Yeah. Uh-huh. This one doubles down on the whole superhero thing and really is more or less a stab at the Marvel, the DC, that whole thing. They really dig into it. I mean, you still have side characters and stuff, but I think when it comes down to it, I played Fractured But Whole, and I liked it. I liked the changes to the combat. You know, this time it was a grid-style combat, not just straight turn-based stuff. But going back, I played Stick of Truth and beat it almost, I think, just a month after Fractured But Whole, and I liked that better. I laughed more at that. I think
At Stick of Truth?
Stick of Truth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think Fractured But Whole is a better made RPG.
Yeah.
But Stick of Truth is the reason I went for it. You know, it's the South Park jokes, and I think that Fractured But Whole is a more focused storyline, mm-hmm. and if you're not super into the whole superhero storyline they have going on in the show, and you're not a huge fan of Marvel or DC movies that they're trying to make fun of, you're not going to have as much goof. So, yeah, it's a good game.
It's a little bit more of an inside joke, though.
But you have to like South Park.
Right.
When I'm looking at the rest of this list, I think it beats out a handful, but not all of them.
Agreed.
So I am fine removing it just because of the things I've heard specifically about the second from the bottom one now.
Yeah, same.
And to that point, too, Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind. I played this for review, and thanks. Did either of you play ESO in any form?
Yes.
I turned it on. I downloaded the whole thing. It was bugged from the moment I created a character.
Is this OG, like ESO, when it first came out? Okay.
No, this is like when the Morrowind expansion thing dropped. Yeah.
Okay, so you tried to download it and couldn't get through.
There was a bug in the code that would not allow me to progress the dialogue.
Hmm.
So I could not get past literally the very first moment of the game.
That's weird. I wonder if it's some sort of... Because me and Kevin do game share. I wonder if it's like some weird sort of...
I have a physical copy.
But that... then there you go. That makes no sense. That should work. I only put Elder Scrolls Morrowind... Elder Scrolls Online Morrowind on this list because I played ESO. I beat it. And for as many cool things as it did, it still felt like a half measure towards a Elder Scrolls game. Morrowind doubled down on that, and the writing was better than anything in the original game. It felt like it had a sense of place. You know, you felt like you were in Morrowind, not just, someplace in Cyrodiil or Tamriel. You know, there was many places in that game, like the desert area and all these different zones that you could look at, but Morrowind stood out to me not only as the best looking, but the best written, had more interesting quest lines. And I think when it comes down to it, Elder Scrolls Morrowind is Elder Scrolls Online. Everything else before that was merely an attempt to get it right. So I think it deserves the nom. But I could see fighting for runner-up. It just depends on these next two. Let's leave it on here for now.
The other two are going to blow it out of the water.
But here's the thing is, okay, let's talk about Divinity. Divinity Original Sin 2.
I can't believe you're going to this first. Okay.
Well, do you want to do Xenoblade first?
Well, I can't really talk much about Xenoblade.
Nor can I.
I've never, ever played either of them.
I played the first one a little bit, and I watched a lot of the second one.
Wasn't a fan?
It looks like my kind of game. I just never bought it because I didn't think I'd have 120 hours.
And there lies a lot of the problem with RPGs. Yeah. Their commitments. I think it deserves a nod. I think it was divisive, to say the least, amongst both critics and players.
Mm-hmm.
So
something Xenoblade does well is a single-player grind.
Go ahead.
This is your game to follow up Bravely Second. This is your game that you want to play before Monster Hunter comes out. If you want to play things by yourself, if that's your bag, Eddie... then by all means, this is your game.
This is the big meal that Kobayashi eats before he goes to the, to the big leagues and actually does his competitive eating.
He just gets a little bit of taste of here, the right? Xenoblade.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. Stretch out his stomach a little bit. Yeah.
It is well worth, I'm pretty sure it was $40. And it was beautiful. If it's not, and it's on Switch, I can't remember if it's on Switch.
I think so, yeah.
Then it was $60, and it was, it was beautiful.
Here's what I'm going to say. I think we're going to knock Xenoblade off it, because when it comes down to the brass tacks, it's going to be between these three.
And
I'm going to need to... I don't feel okay knocking Morrowind off this list until I hear more from you guys specifically about Divinity. Xenoblade...
Okay.
Unless you want to keep Xenoblade.
I don't feel okay knocking Divinity off the list. We need to bring it down to three.
That's what I'm saying. So you're okay with...
I say Xenoblade out.
Xenoblade, all right, I didn't actually get a chance. Right.
I did not want to delete anything that you wanted to fight for.
Not for any criticism of the game itself, just because...
Like we said earlier, this is a SGC list, yeah, this not is an objective list.
Right.
If it was an objective list about the best made, there would be no question, like you said, Persona 5 would have been... done, and we would have had the runner-up already picked, because the runner-up would be Divinity Original Sin 2 if we're talking about content. There's anything that I've heard about Divinity, I have not played Divinity Original Sin 2 for the PC. I have played Divinity Original Sin on Xbox One when they did the re-releases. They did not grab me, but I have heard nothing but good things. Not only about the way this game plays, the options it allots you, and for Tyler, you, like a DM, mm-hmm. the things on that side it gives you the ability to do in the way that you can build the world. It's just so open. I've seen speed runs where people are doing crazy things like going to the hardest boss and then teleporting them to all the other bosses and stuff, because Divinity is a kind of game where it seems so open. But at the same time, I feel like that might be why I jumped off, because I don't like overwhelming option. Tell me your guys' fights for Divinity Original Sin 2, because my fight for ESO is specifically, I liked it a lot, and I thought that it did what the other one, or what the beginning of it didn't do.
No, I know exactly my biggest argument to leverage against ESO.
But I'm saying against. Divinity 2, I can be convinced of. I just need to hear...
I'm saying... On behalf of Divinity 2, against ESO,
yes,
my biggest contribution in terms of argument is the fact that you can literally run a D&D game from Divinity 2.
That's what I'm saying, because you have so many options. Essentially,
for friends that are playing your game in the world of Divinity, and that is just amazing. I love that idea. Divinity was sold to me as a great game for, like, couples, for people who don't necessarily play a lot of video games, because it is inherently a hand-holding experience in some cases. You can definitely both play a major factor in the progression of the game, but it can also play a really great role of there's a point person, and then there's somebody who supports them. It's accessible, which is good. It's multifaceted in that you can play... You can create a game that your friends play. It's an amazing game. I really love Divinity.
So you've played this though.
Yeah, you played
the first one, not the second one.
True.
That's what I'm saying. I just want to make sure that that's the only gripe I have here. I haven't played it. Kevin, I don't think you've played it. And Tyler, I don't think you've played it.
I've seen enough of the second one to really understand what it's getting at.
Yeah.
It built upon what the first one created. It increased, you know, the quality of the game, so it wasn't just like a rehash of the first one with new features. Yes. That's all I have to say.
It is a perfect D&D simulation. You have your party versus the world. And you can literally follow whatever storyline you want. It is the truest RPG that exists.
As you're saying this, I'm deleting Elder Scrolls Morrowind. The best RPG of 2017.
But why?
That's what I was going to say, Tyler. You just want to talk for 2 minutes about why Persona 5 is... Here's the thing about Persona 5. I have tried to play Persona many times, fallen off.
Me too.
I played Persona 5. I was like 6 hours in and they were still tutorialing me. And I was like, man, I gotta play more of this. Right? And usually when I'm 4 hours or 5 hours into the game and it's still trying to handhold me, I'm like, get off my back. Let me play. But Persona is just so full of not only style, the music. You can sense all the designers in it. And the characters are just so fun. I mean, yeah, sure, there's a few that aren't that great. But also the way how it makes you kind of choose who you want to be friends with. Mm-hmm. Has that Night in the Woods kind of feel to. I think it's just a great package. That's just me only playing 6 hours of it.
Uh-huh.
Tyler, you have put how many hours into it?
38.
That's lower
than...
That's
low
than, for you. That's low for me.
But that's... It's hard to ignore the fact that even me only playing 5 hours and not an RPG fan can be like, yeah, no, I give it to this. Because even ESO, which I played at least 60 hours of, it was fine. It was fun. But objectively speaking, I see this game and I know it's a quality game.
On a base level, Persona 5 is cool. Not just in the way like, oh, a cool game. You look at it and you go, that's some cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, cool people made that game. That game is thereby cool. Like, you don't see many games that can pull off that much style and panache. And that's
so full of
something.
Style. It's so full of style. And it's the thing I think that wins it over is it's not style over substance. It's style that adds to the substance.
I've tried countless times to get into P4 Golden, which is listed as some people's favorite game of all time. I have beat my head against that game for 10, 15 hours on multiple playthroughs, and it never grasped me. but I can still see why people like it. I can still see why it's interesting. It kind of reminds me of the old school RPGs I used to love, like Legend of Dragoon, where there's just a little bit more interaction in the turn-based combat mm-hmm. that you need to think tactically. It's not just, oh, Fire Aga, whatever, you know, over and over again.
Persona 5 made me understand why people like Persona.
I think given the chance, I could probably really get into Persona 5.
That's it right there, Matt. That's the reason.
So Tyler, you want to run that by them one more time? What are our two? The winner of best RPG.
Let me talk about Persona
yeah.
now.
Oh yeah, no, you go ahead.
So Persona,
Futaba, best waifu.
On top of all of that, like, yes, I spent 38 hours. No, I don't have every single character in my party yet. What's interesting, the most interesting part of Persona, what I like the most, yes, there's one story. There's 22 understories. 22. Every game.
There's tons of content.
You're going to love every character, or you're going to hate every character. And you're going to love that you hate them, because you feel for every character. Whether it's good or bad. Whether it's happy or sad. Angry or mad. I'm going to keep with the, yeah.
Persona 5 evokes emotion, which very, very few JRPGs and visual novel-esque games, which this game has a lot of talking, they struggle to hit those notes for me, but it did this time. And that's what I said, like, the thing that Persona 5 makes me love about it so much is that when I was playing it, I was like, all of these hours that Tyler spent talking about P4G over the course of Season 3 and Season 2... It made me understand why he was so feverish to get those children in that TV box. Like, I understand now. I get it, and Persona 5 is the game that made me understand.
I got this stupid-ass smile on my face and a tear in my eye because my game is finally fully realized.
it's a damn fine game, and we will definitely be talking about that more when we go to Game of the Year. That being said, we're 41 minutes in. We got two down. Let's go to one of these smaller ones here that's more of just a, you know, yeah, let's do this real quick. We're going to discuss what the best horror game of 2017 was. There was a few nominees. We had Outlast 2. We had Little Nightmares, Observer. Resident Evil 7, Observer, Evil Within 2. And as we boiled it down, because I'm really the horror junkie here, you guys, you saw a little bit of Resident Evil 7.
I thought it was good.
And I played Outlast.
Part of it.
I played Outlast 2 and I thought it was a letdown. Evil Within 2 backed up what the original did. Observer was a more of a style thing, and I think we all agreed it didn't need deliberation. So our best horror game of 2017 is Resident Evil 7, also Resident Evil 7 VR, because that is probably one of the biggest VR experiences on PlayStation VR, one of the only AAA ones. So just put those two together, and then the runner-up is Evil Within 2. So, once again, the best horror game of 2017, Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, and Evil Within 2. Also, want to point out that Resident Evil 7 does have free DLC in addition to paid DLC, and some of that paid DLC is also in VR. So they did a good job following up with DLC, both paid and free updates. So, shout out to them. Let's do another shorter one here. Yeah. Tyler, why don't you talk about that real quick?
So this was a category I threw together because I like card games.
We all love card games.
So this was best card game.
I'm partial poker. To Egyptian rat screw.
Hand slaps.
This is full games that came out.
You trying a Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel right now?
Yu-Gi-Oh! 2017.
Oh man, Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel Links. I forgot about that game. Whoops. Maybe there's a reason.
If there's a reason, then there's a reason.
On this list is Underhand, a mobile game, and Hand of Fate 2, which we talked about last time.
I'm sensing a theme in these namings.
Underhand
of Fate 2. Hey, guys, you should make that game. You know who I'm talking to. The student guys.
Yeah, you guys, make the Hand of Fate 3 under. So what is... There are two games on this list.
One of them we talked about at length. The other one's my game of the year.
I would say hold off on explaining why until we get to best mobile.
Okay. So,
I'm fine with whatever you decide here.
Kevin?
Yeah, what's up?
I need your help.
Okay.
It's the question of what wins and what's the runner-up, because I have not played Underhand yet, but I know you guys have, and Hand of Fate 2 I was hot on, but I can see the reasons against it.
Well, I'm not seeing reasons against it. Is it a better card game?
That's the ultimate question, because a lot of Hand of Fate isn't the card.
Yeah, I would argue
It is like a choose-your-own-adventure packed in there.
Right? Yeah, I would argue that Hand of Fate is the vehicle that
it's more
drives,
a deck builder. The yeah, cards
the
don't really matter.
The vehicle that drives Hand of Fate is the combat. I'm yes. sorry, the card game drives the combat.
Right.
I don't think it's in essence a card game.
So I think that just kind of rules out it for winning.
So it's not even a card game. There was no category to begin with.
No. It's still a card game.
Have you played Blackjack?
Shut the fuck up.
It didn't come out in 2017, Kevin.
You're right. It came out in like 17.
Let's just
17.
Let's just establish that right now.
Hit me.
That our best card game of 2017 was Blackjack. Runner-up Hand of Fate 2. Sorry, Underhand. No, I'm just kidding. Underhand is the best card game of 2017. Hand of Fate 2 squeezing its way in with its mixed genre. That could also be on, like I said, best deck builder, best third person. There's so many different things that Hand of Fate 2 is. But Underhand is a damn well good made card game.
Yeah.
And let's give you time to talk about that as we move into best mobile game. Now, mobile is a category that Kevin and Tyler are always on top of. I am not. I threw some nominees in here. Wiener. Persona 5, the best wiener. Best mobile game of 2017, our nominees are, we're going to go from bottom up, Hidden My Game by Mom.
Hell yeah.
Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, South Park Phone Destroyer, Million Onion Hotel, Puzzle Fighter by Capcom.
Hell yeah.
And Underhand.
Oh, hell yeah.
There is going to be an argument to be had for Underhand winning this. There is going to be an argument to be had for Million Onion winning this. Let's talk about Puzzle Fighter, Tyler.
Puzzle Fighter's a good game.
Puzzle Fighter's a damn good game.
Puzzle Fighter is Marvel vs. Capcom, I think.
It's cute. So those who don't know what Puzzle Fighter is, it's like you stack blocks, kind of Tetris style, and then you blow them up with bombs. You have a little puzzle. You have little Street Fighter people at the top, and they're throwing Hadoukens.
It's just Capcom people. It's not Marvel vs. Capcom. But it's pretty much everything. Everyone
and chibi style.
In Marvel vs. Capcom, on the Capcom side.
And they fight. I think my biggest issue with this game is that a lot of it is PvP. You can't.
It's only PvP.
Well, you can do the missions or whatever.
There are missions?
Yes.
I didn't get that far.
You do it after like 3 or 4 PvP matches, but the missions are also on a cooldown timer, and your rewards come from like E. Honda, who is delegated to a sushi shop. And it's got this very, like, there's a lot of free play kind of cooldown timers, and Animal Crossing has that stuff as well. I just think it's much more. Puzzle Fighter is a game where you play for a few hours and then you cannot play anymore unless you want to spend gems. Whereas Animal Crossing is a game that you could play continuously without spending real money.
Hold on a second, I gotta uninstall Puzzle Fighter.
I mean,
I think we're gonna fight on this.
Okay, I'm removing Puzzle Fighter.
I think we're going to fight on this category.
I'm removing Puzzle Fighter. I think there will be an argument to be had here.
I'm going to go ahead and suggest that maybe we remove South Park.
I was just going to say South Park would be the next one to go. I just want to say
I didn't have any intrinsic problem with this game. It just didn't keep my attention.
Phone Destroyer.
It was funny.
I think Phone Destroyer did things that were funny in the way that it's just a bunch of kids and they're getting on their phones and it's the South Park shtick, so you do have, I do like that they had cutscenes that look just like the cartoon. I like the fun little moments, like we were playing D&D over Tyler's house, and I was showing people the game, and one of the funniest parts is like a light spoiler, but like Cartman calls you, and you open it up, and it's like it's like a FaceTime call. You get those throughout the game. One of the main issues I have against the game is at a certain point in single player progression, you hit Butters, and Butters is doing a very racist caricature of Asians, and he's at the quote-unquote Great Paywall of China,
where
you have to beat 3 PvP matches or 2 PvP matches to go on. That's what stopped me, because I played through at least 2 of those Great Paywalls, where you're bashing your head against people who are paying money for this game. You know, they're building out their decks, because it's a deck builder, and then you throw people out onto like this kind of grid where they fight.
Wait, is it like Clash Royale? Where you have a deck of cards and you fight against someone else?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
That's bad.
You might want to play it.
Clones.
You might want to play it, Tyler, because it's got enough substance and it's got a good enough story.
Install.
That it is worth playing, and I think you might enjoy it more than I did. I did delete it off my phone to make room, and that speaks to me that it cannot be, because other games on this list are still on here and have been there longer.
What do you think? We need at least a two-person agreement to eliminate a nominee? Because I agree that this should be removed.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, cool.
I think the ultimate thing it's going to come down to is the fight between Underhand and Million Onion Hotel.
I agree.
Honestly.
I agree.
Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. Tyler, did you play any of this?
I did.
You did, but you hopped off pretty quickly. What were your pros and cons about it? Because you have played Animal Crossing before, correct?
Yep.
I think that's my biggest issue with Animal Crossing is that fundamentally it's not a great Animal Crossing game. You don't get puns when you fish. Most characters repeat lines. But as far as a treadmill and a grind, there's many moments where many times I can recount me and my girlfriend just laying in bed kind of playing Animal Crossing and like, oh, look, I found you in the game, and it's cutesy. And it's something you can do on the side, too. But it all kind of is just cooldown timers, grabbing resources, doing these small requests. I'm level 42. I've played a lot of hours of this game. It's still basically the same thing.
My biggest problem with this game is that from the moment I loaded it up, I'm like, I feel like this is going to be completely pointless in 2 months. It is super hot, molten, golden shit for 2 months, and then nobody played it anymore.
I disagree, because they're still following it up with, like, Christmas, and they did like, a good thing. Then again, those events are just crafting items, so right, it's more of the same.
Yeah.
I found myself playing it for much longer than I thought I was going to. I was very hot on it for the first hour, because I was like, wow, this is cool, it could be a mobile Animal Crossing, and then I fell off, and then I stuck through, and I like I said, I still load it up almost every other day, and I'm like, okay, let's check on my animals. But I don't think it sits in terms of quality and depth to anything.
Yeah, it's a good game, but it doesn't hang with the rest of the list.
And some people might not like it at all, which yeah. it is definitely, I can see why. So Animal Crossing, we're okay taking this off the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny, you didn't even come to me. Like, you said, Tyler, you play Animal Crossing, right? Yeah, yeah. I also stopped playing Animal Crossing.
That's pretty much, well, okay, so then... I mean, yeah, say your piece about Animal Crossing, because I think you fell off it much quicker than either of us did.
Yeah.
I was so excited to have a phone Animal Crossing game. I'm not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole world was.
Yeah.
I don't like Animal Crossing because I have to take out my game, my game system that I
constantly, once a day. It's not something you can binge through. You have to completely go back to it.
Right. And having it on a phone means I can take it to work and I can just check it for 5 seconds and close it. It also means I can play with my fiance, and that's what I want. I want more things I can do with my fiance that get her into video games.
And that's kind of my thing too. Like I said, Animal mm-hmm. Crossing, I was playing with Sabrina. We were having a great time, and she doesn't play a lot of games. And I think it does have that open welcomeness, but
yeah,
at the end of the day, it's still just kind of trying to grab, it's not even trying to grab money from you, because you get the freemium currency so quickly. It just is kind of the same thing.
I would say it's also missing a competitive factor that I really find draws me into games.
It was almost an idle single-player game with no ladder.
It is, because the economy in the game is only run by the people that you interact with,
right,
with just essentially your friends. So. Right. Yeah, all right, we're going to remove this.
I thought it was good as long as I got... hey, what did you do in Animal Crossing today? Well, I did this. And when I stopped getting those, it got uninstalled.
Mm-hmm. I feel that completely. The last game,
oh,
Kevin.
Oh, man. This is...
I'm so sorry I haven't purchased this yet.
This game... Oh, it's this game is something else.
Million Onion Hotel?
No. I thought we were going to just go to Hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Hidden Game by Mom.
We're not on the
Hidden
same
my
page.
Game.
My bad.
Hidden My Game by Mom.
Is it Hidden My Game by Mom 1 or 2? Because there are two of them.
There are multiples.
Yeah, I just didn't know which one was.
And then
this
year. There's even follow-ups to this.
I hate.
They came out very quickly because they're very simple games, but their simplicity is what makes them fun. They're,
I don't want to start now.
You know how we were talking about how a game has a style, and sometimes they really lean into that style, and sometimes they don't.
Yep.
This game has a style. And they really play it up, and it is hilarious. And I don't know if it's just a language barrier thing, or if it's on purpose. But, man, there's just something about this game that just piques my interest.
But I could argue that Hidden My Game by Mom does similar things that Million Onion does, that Million Onion does way better.
Agreed.
Hidden My Game by Mom is just a simple, your mom is hidden your Nintendo DS, and you have to go through these kind of escape the room esque, very, very simplistic, minimalist design, and, you know, you're just trying to avoid mom, and she's hiding behind the curtain.
Really, really funny, because the first couple levels, it's really obvious, like, you can see her feet underneath the curtain, and
yes,
if you open it, your mom catches you trying to find your game, even though she's hidden it from you, as a punishment.
Yes.
So, there's, like, other times where you can see it under the couch, but you can't reach it, so you have to go into the closet and find a broom to knock it out from under the couch. Then there's other times where you're like, oh, it's clearly going to be hidden in this hamper. And you click the hamper and your mom pops out. She's like, what are you doing? It's just like...
I think the game is funny, but as a mobile game and the depth and the scope of it,
yeah,
I fell off after like four or five levels. It doesn't have longevity. It is just a level-based kind of escape the room thing. But damn if it isn't well made.
It's just cute. It's cute.
I think that this comes down to Underhand versus Million Onion Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what our two are.
God.
The question is, what's the winner and what's the runner-up? I think I know where it's going to fall.
I'll tell you what. What do you want out of a mobile game? What do you want more out of your mobile game?
When I go to a mobile game, I want something that can keep my interest for long enough that I'll return to it, but I can play in short bursts, and that's kind of why I like Animal Crossing. Is this something you can do within 30 yeah. minutes, and then you can come back knowing that you haven't really missed anything?
Yeah.
The reason I bounced off Phone Destroyer is that it was so deep. And I think that's what Million Onion does the best, is that it has a level of depth where you can get into it if you so please, but you can also just play it as a crazy tappy game that's weird and fun. Mm-hmm. I would agree that the level of depth is kind of like something you need to get into, and at first blush, Million Onion can be pretty just, oh, you're tapping onions and that's it. I think Million Onion strikes a chord for me specifically in that way, because that's what I look for, but I think that that is an excellent qualifier. Kevin, what do you go to mobile games for?
I think
you go to something different completely than what I do.
I go for a lot of mobile games that I play for an hour and then I delete. I kind of vary because I really like Knights of Pen and Paper, but I didn't beat them. I just deleted them today, actually.
I was actually just going to
play.
I was about to delete Knights of Pen and Paper, which is crazy to me because I played it for so long.
Yeah, same here. And I enjoyed it, but I just got to a point where I'm just grinding and it's just not fun to me anymore. The game I play the most, there are two games, mobile games, that I played more than any other mobile game. One of them is Unison League, which we talked about at length in our old episodes. And the current champion, and I would say is probably approaching how long I played Unison League, is Clash Royale. And I really like Clash Royale because it has those features of there's a bit of a timing mechanism. There is a PvP aspect.
It's only PvP.
True. But there's also the team. You can play against your guild and everything like that.
True.
It's not always competitive PvP. There are fun aspects of that game. It's also a deck builder. If it were on this category, it would be my absolute definite game of the year. It's really hard for me to say what I enjoy the most about a mobile game, but if I were to boil it down to something, it would be that it's arcadey. I like that I can start new sessions without repercussions. I don't necessarily like things that I have to log progression in. So
I think specifically when it comes to Million Onion Hotel, and the reason it stood out for me, beyond just the immediate kind of like, ooh, what is this? Who made it? And that from that aspect, because I was originally drawn to the game purely from I'm probably going to write an article and do an interview about this, so I want to get into the weirdness of this. But Million Onion Hotel is a game that I thought I understood, and I thought I knew what it was. And then someone said, hey, when you get into double time, you should avoid the fruits because then you can't get miracle time. And I said, what are you talking about? And then I realized that if you get a double, because what Million Onion Hotel is it's like a bingo board and little onions pop up. And if you get them in a line like bingo, oh, you earn time back. You're always fighting the clock. And then I realized that if you set it up certain and you get double or triple lines, that opens up a space thing. And then you can get little knights, and you can collect them earlier than when you're supposed to in the boss rush, and then that's how you beat bosses quicker. And it was this level of depth that I was like, I had no clue. It was under my nose the entire time, and it was just because I was playing the game frantically, and it wasn't until I looked at it closer and realized that I'm not going to beat the game using these tactics that I figured it out.
It kind of reminds me of old school games where you didn't have the strategy guide, you didn't have the directions to go through it, and you slowly have to uncover that information yourself.
I agree. But I think we've given a lot to Million and Hotel right now, and I want Tyler to...
needs to be discussed. This is
I need to hear things, because I have not yet played it, but you've played quite a bit of it.
So good.
I beat it. I 100% of this game. I beat it in 2 days.
And actually, that's what I'll say is, as a detractor against Million and Hotel, once I figured out the whole double time, miracle time, getting... I have gotten a half of a click of a health bar away from beating the game. And once I learned the trick of it, the get doubles and then get the knights, I almost beat it like 2 runs after that. So I will say that I guess once you learn the depth of Million Under Hotel, and if you're not going for a high score, you can finish it quite quickly. But that's what I would say is a knock against it, is that it is a short game once you figure it out. Continue. Underhand, though, you said it's you finished it. How long did it take you to finish it if you have to like get an hour guess?
6 hours.
Yeah, because I would say all told, maybe it took me 10 runs to get to the end of Million Onion. And that's no more than 2 to 3 hours. Is Underhand free?
Yes.
Million Onion Hotel is paid. I don't think that's something we should really think about, but I think in terms of content versus how much you're going to get, say your piece about Underhand. Explain to everybody what it is, because like I said, we kind of brushed over it during Best Card.
We did.
Because you needed to talk about it now. So explain to everybody, including the audience, I guess, what the game is, what it does, and why it drew you in so much. Because, yeah, you're going to have to convince us. I know where I sit, but I can... there's few games that you get this amped about.
That's very true.
Very few.
That's very true. Last time on SGC... I did that on purpose. We talked about this game briefly. We talked about the little things that I liked, and we talked about how it was an occult card deck building kind of game. You're always playing against the deck trying to summon a god. You have a limited number of things in the deck, and you reshuffle at the end of it. So you know that by the third shuffle, what is in your deck and what to watch out for. You know what you need. You need to sacrifice your prisoners, and you know you need to earn favor. Otherwise, the gods will come down and smite your whole place, and then you have to start over. You know you have to stop eating food so the Wendigo will be pleased that you're eating people.
So it's one of those things you like the replay, and then you're learning more and more as you play, and that's what's giving you... Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
Is Underhand Boneless Pyre without the space basketball or whatever?
I don't know what that means.
I have no idea what that means.
Pyre is the game that you were super amped about, Sega Blue made, whatever. That's like the kind of card builder...
What, like Transistor Pyre?
Yeah.
Are
you talking about? Yeah. But that's the same kind of thing where it has card building in it, and it's about building up a cult, but there's like some weird basketball sports. I just didn't know if it... Because no one's played Pyre yet, I don't think, here. And I've heard a lot of people talk about that, and when you're talking about Underhand, it sounds like Pyre. I'm just not sure. Continue talking about it, because that's just the first thing that came to my mind, but I've never played Pyre, so I didn't know if that was... Because Underhand is a student-made game, right?
Yes, I think it was 2, maybe 3 guys. And again, thank you, fellas. You did an amazing job.
Both these picks speak volumes to the fact that small developers are where it's at. Because, like, it's an Underhand is a 2 to 3 student, and Million Onion Hotel is a 3-person studio out of Shibuya. So both of these picks, regardless of how the cards fall, we're rewarding small ass teams, and that's surprising as hell to me when you have huge funds like. Like, South Park probably had so much money behind it, and the fact that Underhand is 3 students, and we can appreciate the quality of that, speaks volumes for where the mobile market is at this point.
So what really threw it over the edge for me? Normally, I don't play games with sound on. It's annoying. It's distracting.
Yep, I agree with that completely.
And for a mobile game, I'm looking to waste my time. This game had such... I accidentally plugged my headphones in one day. While I was playing the game, and the ambiance is perfect. The card burning noise is not upsetting or harsh. at all. And the third sound that comes through is voices, which is perfect for this occult-based game. And it's also pretty hilarious. I think I talked about this before, the radio where Bobby or Susie is talking about the devil. You take them to church. Make sure you bring them to church every Sunday. And we'll exorcise them or whatever. The milkman has gone missing. If you see him, call...
So there's like some fun little world-building stuff in it?
Yeah. And as small as it is, it was well-crafted. And it scared the crap out of me the first time I heard it. But it I had to listen to it for the remainder of the time I was playing it because I needed to know what else you put in there. Those small little Easter eggs that made this game so much more...
I feel like Million Onion has that kind of quirkiness in the sound as well, because as you click the onions and as you unlock things, the soundtrack progresses, and also as you click things, the onions themselves make little, like, ah-ah-ahs, but they're always in line with the chord progression of the song. So I agree with you in that I always turn off the music, and I did turn off the music eventually in Million Onion, but it was a really cool thing to see that the sound effects were tied into the soundtrack.
Right.
I honestly think when it comes down to this, we're just going to end up at a fucking stalemate.
Mm-hmm.
Because me and Kevin are vying for Million Onion, but you love Underhand so hard that I can see where you're coming from.
And I like Underhand enough to not be able to pick it over Million Onion. Like, I like them both for very different reasons.
I could see both winning this, and I have no problem with both winning this.
Yeah, same.
And that's my purpose, but we have to pick one. It's just the question of shit.
If I got to pick one, I'm going to pick Million Onion, only because Underhand was a little bit too short for my liking.
Did you finish it?
I didn't finish it because in a lot of ways it wasn't always obvious as to what the correct path was, which I guess means
I can say you can say that as well for Million Onion, though.
Exactly.
Yes.
I just like the twitchy gameplay of Million Onion a little bit better. It's more interactive, I think, is what it comes down to. Whereas Underhand is slow, careful planning. Million Onion is frantic DDR button pressing.
But once you learn the depth of it, that is not what the game is.
True.
100%. Unless you get lucky off of like some easy doubles and stuff like that. I guess you can just finish Million Onion just by frantically tapping without learning the depth of it. That is something that can be done.
I think that's what I'm trying to say, is that Million Onion has more levels, in my opinion. Not literally, but figuratively speaking. From a gameplay standpoint.
Yeah. Well, I feel the worst here because I have not played Underhand.
Underhand leans on narrative and clever triggers.
Whereas Million Onion barely has a narrative. The narrative it does have is like super wacky, crazy out there.
Yeah.
Barely cohesive in a sense.
But I do like the discovery of trying to figure out what to do. I mean, that applies to both of them. I'm really, really having a hard time here.
So, I was like, let's do mobile because I think it'll just be a bag. And it's just, oh God, this is one of the hardest decisions we have to make so far.
The more I talk about it, the less I'm convinced that Million Onion
is the winner and that Underhand is.
No. Not even that. Like, they stand in the same place as far as I'm concerned.
Do you guys just want to say that our winners for best mobile games of 2017 is Underhand and Million Onion Hotel?
Yes. I mean, with how many fucking mobile games I played this year, if it's only two, that's good.
I mean, I'm just gonna list a couple.
Make this more complicated.
This is the Stranger Things mobile game was fun.
Fuck that. Oh, you know, wow, I completely forgot about that. Oh wow. Yo, real quick, I might even put that above Million Onion.
If you do that, you're going to make this very hard.
Oh, no. Stranger Things, the game was so well made, though.
It was very well made.
It wasn't a mobile game. You just played it on your phone.
Yep.
It was a Super Nintendo game.
It was.
Shit. Oh, wow.
This looks like an RPG.
It is. Oh, my God.
It's very good. It's very, very good.
It's very
Define
good.
Very good.
It's
holy God! It's got 52,000 reviews, and
it's fantastic for a free to play game.
95% of them are five stars.
It's also based off of a TV series,
that's
so we're
very
also
good. Yeah,
yeah.
Shit, did I just make this way harder for... Oh,
yeah,
God.
You did.
Sorry. My bad.
Do you have to go into the upside down? Holy shit. Holy shit, do you want to go over the upside down?
Do we want to come back to this?
No, do we come this far? It's an hour and 10 in.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. Sorry, my display on my computer. Now my brain is just like, hey, you forgot about Stranger Things.
And that kind of subverts our whole fight for the little guy thing too, because
Stranger Things was made by a smaller
Netflix
company.
That's true.
That's
Bonus XP Inc.
Yeah, I've talked to them on Twitter. Bonus XP is a good group of small devs that just happened to grab a really good property and run with it. Shit. Shit.
Mobile game of the year, Sausage Legend.
I'm sorry, what?
All right, you know what? Let's not open this can of worms. Let's just say best mobile games 2017 are Underhand and Million Onion Hotel, with a nice honorable mention to Stranger Things.
Because we forgot about it.
Dual winner in mobile. There's no other way to move on.
We cannot be hung up on this.
Holy shit.
We still have so much to do.
We do. This is definitely going to be a two-weeker, probably.
Yeah.
The main thing, the reason I wanted to knock all this out in 1 week is because we do have AGDQ coming up.
Yep.
But we did say that best of 2017 would end up being 100, so I think that's fair if we cap most of this off next week.
It could be 99.5.
Yes.
It's going to be 100.
It's going to be 100. I'm fine with that, because then we're going into season 4 at 101. I'm completely okay with that. I don't think GOTY or any GOTY are going to be on this episode. Jesus, let's talk about this real quick. I played a ton of PSVR this year. A metric fuck ton of PSVR. Shouts out to my good friend Zach for letting me borrow this for much longer than he or I anticipated, and his continual support of me using this for work and stuff. I played so many games. Super Hot VR, Accounting Plus, Skyrim Super. VR, Doom VFR, Shooty Fruity, Everland Space. There's like a million games. Soulless Project, Rec Room. And out of all those, I came down to this. The winner, and it's a small caveat, is that both of these games are essentially games that have been made before and are now reaching a new status. Accounting Plus is a game that came out on PC, VR consoles, and was a much shorter game. It was free. And then Accounting Plus came out on PlayStation VR and Vive and stuff, and that was a paid version that had more content in it. Skyrim VR is Skyrim, but just in VR, and that's a game that came out 6 years ago, 7 at this point. So what it ended up becoming was the best PSVR game of 2017 was Accounting Plus, and the runner-up was Skyrim VR, which is nuts to me because that's not even how my top personal 10 works out. But I think for the way SGC and Kevin, you've only played so much PSVR, and Accounting Plus was something that you popped the headset on your head and you got lost in it and beat it in one go.
Yep.
And then when you took off your headset and realized how late it was in the night, said it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So that I do agree. As far as a group, best PSVR accounting.
What's VR?
Virtual reality.
Oh.
You put a TV that's shaped on your face, and then it makes it feel like you're not.
Burns into your retinas?
Yeah, and then it makes you feel like you're not in real life.
Real quick, have you seen those the new Donkey videos where he's in some
VR chat?
Yeah, dude. Oh my God.
Shout out to Video Game Donkey.
That sounds like
fun. Best YouTuber 2017.
That sounds like fun.
As I look at this list.
Also, I disagree with that, but.
I think we should take a brief break real quick.
Okay.
Just take a breather, because we've been talking for an hour and 15 straight. We have to look at these categories real quick and see what we're going to do this week and what we're going to do next week. Be right back after this fun little, I don't know, it's going to be a music something. After that refreshing break, we have decided that this
refreshing
is
breath of
of a fresh break.
They brought me to a Poke Center and threw me in a little healing thing, and I wasn't in a ball.
Ding, 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 ding.
It hurt.
We are going to be doing this, obviously, into two episodes, because we put out our and X amount of minute episodes. We're not Giant Bomb. We don't do 3-hour episodes, 4-hour episodes. So we're going to split this in between this week and next week. For our last two categories, we will be doing Biggest Disappointment, and then we'll also be doing Best Narrative-Driven Game at the end. That will contain some spoilers, and we'll let you know. So if you hear any of these nominees on Best Narrative-Driven and you want to, you know, finish them before we talk spoilers, you can just turn off the episode there or skip to the ending, and we'll figure it out from there. So, with that being said, guys, we made it through Best Expansion, Best Horror, Best Card Game, Best RPG, Best Mobile, Best PlayStation VR, and we have only just begun. Next week will be Game of the Year, Indie Game of the Year, Best Shooter, Best Platformer, Best Action Adventure, Best Fighter, and Best Soundtrack, with some other fun little things as we look towards 2018. But like I said, for now, let's start off with the biggest letdown of 2017. These next two categories are going to go pretty quick. Our nominees are For Honor, a.k.a. For Honor. That is that Ubisoft fighting game. Honor. Yeah. Mass Effect Andromeda, Star Wars Battlefront 2, Outlast 2, Middle Earth Shadow of War, and 1-2 Switch for the Nintendo Switch. Here's the one I want to start with, 1-2 Switch.
We put Bomberman on here. Is it
Bomberman R?
Yeah.
We can add that because I think, honestly, that goes over 1-2 Switch. I think that the biggest disappointment for 1-2 Switch was that it wasn't free. It was something they charged full price for.
It's like Wii Sports caliber.
Yeah.
But it's not even Wii Sports caliber, because at least Wii Sports had a few games you would continuously play.
Tennis.
But even that, like table tennis in 1-2 Switch, we played multiple games of, but I don't think anybody has touched 1-2 Switch from my friend group since the first one or two nights where we were trying to show it off to different friends. Right. I played 1-2 Switch for probably a total of 15 hours between the launch stream that we did for Space Brain Gaming and then just hanging out over people's houses who had just gotten a Switch. But once you've seen it, once you've had that first night where you play it with your friends, there is no substance. You play them, there's no high score, there's no challenges, there's no stars. It's just, here's your games, have fun, and I hope you have somebody to play with, because that's the only thing you can do. I think that for a game that they were toting as Wii Sports, you know, the Wii Sports for Switch, it was a huge letdown in that. I just think that there's bigger letdowns in this category. But I do want to hear your guys' opinions on 1-2 Switch.
How many games were in 1-2 Switch?
I think at least 30, maybe 25, and that's the problem, is that a lot of the games, there was more games than I thought there were going to be, and very few of them had substance.
I didn't play it, so
there was maybe a handful that were fun. Do you have?
Yeah. 1-2 Switch is a party game in which players do not usually rely on what is happening on a screen, but rather make use of audio cues and functionality of the Joy-Cons.
That's a big thing. You don't look at the Switch when you're doing it. You look at each other, the right person you're playing with. And in that way, it's barely a game. It's more of a guided experience.
Yes, which, I mean, and truly, it was a toolbox to show off everything the Switch can do.
The Joy-Cons, too. It was too. A tech demo.
Essentially, yeah, yes.
It's a tech demo.
I don't want to pay $40 for a tech demo.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I think, well, and here's the question, too, because we just put Bomberman R on here, and I think Bomberman R is the flip side, is that it's something that people thought could have been good. It's a party game. It's Bomberman. How hard is it to get done? And then you play it, and you're like, Jesus, how did you get this wrong? It feels bad. It doesn't have good game modes. It's just all over the place.
The story mode is regular Bomberman.
It's not even a story mode. It's just like, hey, we didn't want to call this pre-made levels.
Right. Let me ask you. Did you play Bomberman 64?
Yes.
Did you know there's a story in that, right?
Of course. You walk around, you talk to the little people. There's like a map you walk around. It's not just one Bomberman level. You
right.
go around an area.
Did you play Bomberman Tournament for Game Boy Advance?
No.
No? That is the biggest open world Game Boy Advance game I've ever played.
So it feels really weird that they had Nintendo Switch, one of the most powerful Nintendo systems to ever come out, and that their first Bomberman game is essentially, what I would pay $15 for that, probably.
For 50.
I mean, and there was a lot of problems in the beginning of Switch. It's still an issue today because of the cartridge price and stuff like that. These Switch games are more expensive than their counterparts, and they get They get knocked up. Sorry, Kevin pulled his beanie down and he was just covering his eyes just enough he looked like a slight ninja without the bottom part. I think 1-2 Switch is going to get removed from this list, and I also think Bomberman R is. But
I don't know. I think 1-2 Switch. Well, no. I think nah.
Fine. I think 1-2 Switch might be capable of winning runner up. It just depends on how we want to deal with the big two ones that I see here. Let's leave them on this. Let's leave them on here for now. I think Bomberman R is just a bad game. I don't think it. I think 1-2 Switch let people down more than Bomberman R did.
Okay, take Bomberman R down.
Okay, but I do. I'm very glad you brought that up because when I think of the worst two Switch games that launched with, it was those two. And considering that Zelda was so close to launch, it was like, how did you put out this many stinkers?
Zelda was launch.
Oh, yeah, it was launch. So it's like, okay, if I'm going to decide between Zelda and Bomberman, oh, God, you better hope you pick Zelda, even if you're not a Zelda fan, because Bomberman is just like three different maps. Well,
you know, it's funny, because I picked Zelda and Bomberman, and I was so upset.
You're so mad. Well, there wasn't a lot of options. But okay. Yeah.
I bought two games that I didn't play.
Middle-Earth Shadow of War. Actually, let me do this real quick before we talk about that. Outlast 2. Here's the whole reason Outlast 2 is on here. The first game was cool. Psychological horror. Creepiness. You're never sure what you're... They did the whole handy cam thing. Found footage. Outlast 2 promised to be bigger, badder. You're going to be in the outdoors. And what it was really was, let's try to take out those psychological horror elements and replace them with shock value, like dead kids and weird sexual stuff involving like kids. And it was...
I don't know if Outlast 1 really laid on the religion real heavily, but I think they were trying to tap a rich vein that is part of the political, the socio-political spectrum that we live in now. But along with like the weird dead baby thing,
yeah,
they wrote it too hard.
Outlast 1 had religion in the themes. Outlast 2 is like, hey, guess what this game's about? Religion, we're really going to beat it over your head. And to that point, too, it wasn't like the open environments did anything to benefit the game. If anything, it just showed how stupid the AI was. So Outlast 2 wasn't a huge letdown in comparison. I gave it a 7 or a 7.5. It's still an okay game. It's still a decent game. It's a fun time if you're a fan of shock value horror. But in comparison to what I was expecting after the first game, it just didn't do it. I'm removing it from the list because I don't think it hangs.
Not like some of those.
Let's talk about For Honor real quick.
Matt?
Did either of you guys play this? Or was it just me? Okay. Because I played it for a review, and I only did the campaign. My review was a campaign-only review, because I knew that Ubisoft was selling us as For Honor, it's going to be, you know, a season-based fighter that you guys are going to get super into, and with super deep mechanics, and then it's just two people pushing you off the edge of a map every time you start a goddamn multiplayer game. I've seen the most ridiculous stuff in there. But not only was the multiplayer underwhelming to begin with, it might be better now with all the updates, but the campaign was just bleh. It was just like, I don't remember a single thing about it. I mean, that could be said because I played it in March or May, whenever it came out, but for an Ubisoft game that's using kind of what like Rise did, in you could directionally block, it was really deep in the combat and did nothing to give you a reason to care about those systems. I might just be misremembering, but for me, For Honor, I didn't have a lot of anticipation going into it, but I walked away caring about it less than I did when before I played it, which is, you play through a whole entire game, you should at least be able to be like, I enjoyed it in this, but it's just such a wash for me. For Honor was just such an okay game that I barely remember it, and I mean, I'm probably doing disservice to people who play it and like the multiplayer aspect, but I could care less. What do you think, Tyler?
I wanted to play this game with all my friends for a long time, and I got everyone hyped up, and then no one bought it because they know better. So the thing about this game, something went wrong.
Well, it sold you on that promise. You get your friends together, you play, and you can be the samurai, you can be the Viking, there's different weapons and different styles, so it's really how you want to play it. They almost give you that Monster Hunter, like, each weapon is different. And then you find out, no, just get a big-ass long pole arm and push people off the map. That is the game. But it sold us, like you said, get your friends together. Right. Epic battles.
Be a squad.
No, that's not how it is. Even Ghost Recon Wildlands, which isn't that great of a game, does that stuff better. I
was just so severely disheartened. I think I'm on record on the show saying For Honor is going to be the game we're playing all the way to the end of the year. It's going to be so fun.
A lot of people thought that too, though. It's not a knock against you. That's what they sold us on.
I guess, you know, how long did you play? You didn't play the multiplayer.
I played a teeny bit of it. Yeah, I played probably maybe 5 to 6 matches of it because there was duos. There was also like 4-man squads. Right,
and there was 1v1s and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they made it so that you had to play certain matches to level up and to participate in your whatever clan you picked
event. And there was so much extra stuff with the clan stuff that bogged it down.
I didn't understand what I was doing, and I would always lose. Whatever faction I was a part of, like, I picked Vikings. Yes. Because I think Vikings are awesome. But apparently everyone thinks Samurai and Knights are way cooler. Cool. Knights are boring.
It has that whole issue, kind of the same thing that Splatoon does when you have those Splatfests, is that you have severely...
Ketchup versus mayo.
You have severely underplayed classes, and so the whole thing is out of whack because it is this weird like land battle kind of thing. I think For Honor has too many cooks in the kitchen, has too many ideas, and all of them kind of fall flat. I don't know if it'll even get runner-up. Here's the question. Would you have For Honor or 1-2 Switch on this? Which one would you rather have on this list? Because I think both of them... don't do similar things, but
I would knock them both off.
I mean, I would knock them both off, but when I look at this, I think... Let's talk about this real quick. Star Wars Battlefront 2. Did anyone of us actually play it?
No.
Because here's the thing. Star Wars Battlefront 2... This is called Biggest Letdown. And I think everyone assumed... I had this discussion with Matt when we did our 90s Kid Game of the Year stuff, and we had a similar category. And here's the thing. I think everyone knew that Star Wars Battlefront 2 was going to be in some capacity shit. It was just how big. No one foresaw the top downvoted Reddit comment. That whole thing surrounding it. And everything I hear about the game is that the game itself is stunted by a very bad progression system that's tied to loot boxes, but there's still a glimmer of fun to be had. Mm-hmm. Whereas,
it's Star Wars.
Yeah, I think there's still fun to be had, and I think since none of us played it, it's easy to jump on the train of the hate, because EA is shit right now, and I completely agree, loot boxes and everything they did, but at the core, I never played the campaign, I've heard different things about that. I have not played the game at all, and there's enough variety in people's opinions that I don't think it could unanimously win this without us playing it. And that's the argument I have against it winning and other things that we have played moving higher up on this list.
This is still an SGC list. That is fair.
And that's what I say is that...
I'm convinced in that capacity because every time I see gameplay, I'm just like, how is this bad?
If you remove all of the bullshit of the progression system, the loot boxes, Star Wars Battlefront 2 is possibly one of the best looking games of the console generation. The thing is they failed, but the content is still there. The thing is the multiplayer is what everyone complains about. No one ever talks about the campaign. At the most, they say it's mediocre, but that's the same argument we're making about For Honor, you know, is that right. It's just mediocre. It didn't live up to what we said. So I think in this regard, I would actually take Star Wars Battlefront 2 off the list and For Honor over it. That's what I would do.
I think that's fair.
I would say if this category was biggest ripoffs, worst business practice,
then it would be Star Wars Middle Earth 1-2, just like that.
Yep.
But yes. Even
Middle Earth though, I think there's reasons that it doesn't need to be on this list. In comparison to Star Wars Battlefront 2, because if it's a loot box thing, Star Wars Battlefront 2's entire progression system online revolves around loot boxes. Middle Earth 2, it's only the end game. And by the time you get to the end game, you do have enough currency where you can beat that game without ever spending a dime. It's just that they end-loaded that game with the loot box bullshit instead of giving you credits. And that's the biggest letdown in that regard. But I still... Okay. Here's what I say we do. I say we take off Star Wars Battlefront 2. I say we take off Middle-Earth Shadow of War, because at the end of the day, I played through Middle-Earth Shadow of War, and I still had fun with it. I stopped playing when they started asking you to build up these whole big armies, and that was still fun, but at a certain point they're like, that's all you're going to be doing, and then there is the loot box stuff, and that turned me off. But before that, there was still a decent, somewhat decent sequel. In a bad year, Shadow of War could have won Game of the Year. And that's why I think Star Wars Battlefront 2 can't say that, because it is so bogged down in the progression. I thought this was going to be an easy list. Have we knocked it?
Yeah. We've knocked it.
So right now we got our 3-4 Honor, Mass Effect, Andromeda, and 1-2 Switch. We can't say
because we didn't play.
Did anybody besides me play Mass Effect?
No, I'm not one to play a game out of order.
True.
That's my biggest problem.
Well, and here's the problem with that, too, is Mass Effect Andromeda was sold as you don't have to play the first three.
That's what I heard, and I...
But then they reused all of the same, like, races from the previous, and they gave you things with expectations that you should have known the existing universe.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mass Effect Andromeda is a giant letdown in that. I think that it wins this because there was still hope, you know? When we found out afterwards that there was devs that were stolen and put on the Anthem team, and then those Anthem team members stole ideas from Mass Effect Andromeda, and the designers ended up being first-time game makers in some instances, we started to understand why. But before we knew all that, there was still a hope that Mass Effect Andromeda would be good. And it was so bad it killed the franchise. There's no refuting the fact that Star Wars, or not Star Wars, Mass Effect Andromeda was so bad critically and commercially,
mm-hmm.
that they have tabled it indefinitely. We'll always get a Star Wars game.
Dude.
But EA killed Mass Effect Andromeda because they made such a bad game.
Dude, seriously. Like, I have two friends. I have two friends. One of them's my cousin, Nick. You have told me time and time again that I need to play Mass Effect because it's so goddamn good.
It's great. It's a fantastic series. I think it lets down a little bit off on 3, but as a trilogy, it's really good.
Tyler is the other person, and he lent me his Steam account. He gave me his password and everything to play Mass Effect 1 and 2.
Yes.
And I couldn't do it. I was given two choices, three options each, and the combat system just doesn't... I didn't like it. But then again, I started with the first one.
Yeah.
And it was clunky and old.
I can agree with that completely. Mass Effect 2 is where they fixed. That is my biggest problem. I think Mass Effect Andromeda, gameplay-wise, is worse than 1. And that's saying something.
I can't believe this. I can't believe that the whole series
is done. They've tabled it.
Just indefinitely. There won't be another one.
Nope.
That's crazy.
And that's... They crazy. Fumbled it that bad.
Dude.
And it wasn't even just a bad game. The PC release was shrouded with bugs. There was, I mean, if you saw the video game Donkey video or any of the other videos on there, the facial animations were better in the original game we're talking about. I think Mass Effect Andromeda runs away with this category. I think the biggest thing we have to deal with right now is deciding if 1-2 Switch or 4 Honor is our runner-up. Because we're at an hour 30, and if we want to even...
completely convinced me to change my mind here. Like, I was ready to knock 4 Honor and 1-2 Switch off the list. But I think those are the ones I've zeroed in on as well.
I think the question is that 1-2 Switch is more of a, wow, you charged us this amount of money for this kind of shallow content. And 4 Honor is more of, wow, you made us these big promises, and then... All of them were very underwhelming. But at the end of the day, there is still substance to the game. So do we... It is biggest letdown. And I think there was more expectation for 4 Honor than there was for 1-2 Switch. But both games are undeniably shallow for what they charge you and the expectations they gave you. Because 1-2 Switch also had the expectation of being the new Wii Sports. And I don't care who you are. You played Wii Sports more than you played most of your launch or Wii games. Like, it was fun. It's what brought people together. Is this list Mass Effect, Andromeda, and then 4 Honor?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Tyler, what do you think? Because I can go either way.
I'm leaning Mass Effect 1-2 Switch, but I wanted 4 Honor to be so much more than it was.
I had some fun with 1-2 Switch.
I had...
And that's the only thing that I can say that I wouldn't give it a runner-up is because I did laugh quite a lot. It's just once you've seen it, that's it. And they charge you $50 for it.
It did exactly what I wanted it to do once. And I didn't have to pay for it. Someone else did.
So is that a letdown or is that just a...
That's not a letdown. I didn't expect anything from it. It's not a letdown. For Honor is number 2.
Okay. So, thank you, Tyler. Our list,
that stupid lock thing. Just like...
That is a great...
That was fun.
Point. Because I did laugh at 1-2 Switch. I had fun imagining. And at certain points, like I was playing with in Space Marine Gaming, and me and Shiro were playing table tennis, you could really feel It almost felt like there was an invisible...
I'm telling you, that HD Rumble is nuts.
So the fact that it was able to put those out and it was able to at least make good on some of the things they're talking about with HD Rumble, whether or not they've used it since. Yeah. Biggest letdown of 2017, Mass Effect Andromeda runner-up is Ubisoft's For Honor, which they are still supporting, so they just announced a new season for that.
I want to touch back on this Mass Effect 2 thing.
Yes, go for it.
Mass Effect 2 came out in 2010.
It's the best Mass Effect there is.
In January 26, 2010. And it won three different Game of the Years, like including the BAFTA.
Yes. It's fantastic.
It is the best game of 2010. And arguably one of the best science fiction RPG series of all time.
And you give it one of the biggest budgets ever given from EA.
It's just like hearing something like that. It's like imagining Mega Man and then watching someone else ruin it.
It's akin to the Mighty Number 9. It's akin to what's happened with Metal Gear. Once revered series, and a company, aka Konami, has put it into the ground.
I mean, EA's only leverage at this point are the ability to net big name titles. Because otherwise, EA literally are scarlet letters now.
Well, and that's the problem. I mean, that is seriously the problem. The EA proverbial graveyard just grows and grows, and Mass Effect is one that I never thought would hit there, because there was the hope that you cannot fuck up Mass Effect so badly that it kills the franchise.
There was a really funny picture I saw on Reddit this week of the King Korok, the King Korok from Breath of the Wild. Uh-huh. And he's standing there with his little maracas, and he's like, for just one seed, I will expand your inventory space. And then the same shot, but they photoshopped the words to say, for just $1.99, I can expand your inventory space. And instead of on Breath of the Wild, they put E and then A, where the E in Breath and the A in Breath are.
I mean, Zelda is the big E and A in Zelda.
Yeah.
It's a good point. It's a good point. We're an hour and 35 in. Do we want to move narrative to next week?
Do you want to talk about it real quick? I mean,
we haven't done anything real quick.
All right. That's what I continuously say.
Let's call it there then.
Okay. So next week, guys, we will have for you Game of the Year, Indie Game of the Year, Best Shooter, Best Platformer, Best Action Adventure, Best Fighting, Best Narrative Driven, and Best Soundtrack. It will be a jam-packed episode. Thanks for sticking around for us, guys, with these lower categories. We got some big winners today. Persona 5. Let's go over our winners again. Once again, the best expansion of 2017 were the GTA 5 online expansions. Runner-up Forza Horizon 3. Yes, nice clap from the crowd. Best horror game was Resident Evil 7, Biohazard, and Evil Within 2 for runner-up. Best card game, Underhand. Shouts out to them. And the runner-up was Hand of Fate 2. Mm-hmm. Best RPG, Persona 5. That's the wiener. And Divinity Original Sin 2 is runner-upper. Some nice...
I don't even know if that's picking
best
up.
Best mobile, there was no runner-up. It was a dead tie between Underhand and Million Onion Hotel.
No, there was a runner-up. It was Stranger Things.
Oh, with the runner-up being Stranger Things, because we forgot. My bad. And best PlayStation VR game was Accounting Plus, with the runner-up being Skyrim VR.
A seven-year-old game.
Exactly. But in VR, and it was well-made. Kevin... Do you have a game fact for us?
This is not the end of the episode. This is the middle of a two-part episode.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So we will see you guys next week. Thanks for sticking around. We have way more Game of the Year stuff. Also, real briefly, I just want to shout out a90skid.com if you want to read articles written by me and Kevin. If you want to check out some great video content, there is the A90s Kid YouTube. Also, our own YouTube, Super Gamecast 64. There's great podcasts to listen to. You got Shonen Trash Cast, that is an anime show. You got Choose My Own Adventure. Great. What system do they use? It's not...
The Fate system.
I think they use
system.
The Fate system.
The
yeah.
Fate system. So shouts out to them as well.
It's really cool.
There's just tons of stuff, guys. It's going to be coming in 2018. And if you're interested in speed runs, January 7th to January 14th, a Sunday to a Sunday, is Awesome Games Done Quick 2018, which I will be covering. Till next week, guys. It's been a hell of a year. Thanks for listening to episode 99. We'll see you for 100, right?
We will.
I'm your host, Matt. Hey, I forgot. Yeah, no, Twitter's and all that stuff too. If you guys want to find us, you can email us at sgc64mail@gmail.com. The Facebook group is facebook.com/SGC and then 64 spelled out. If you want to reach out to us, the show Twitter is @SuperGameCast64, but my personal is @SGC64Matt.
I'm @GingerBeard_man, beer like the beverage.
I'm @TTremalio.
And as always, guys, leave us a review on iTunes. 5 stars helps all sorts of things. Shout out to our Mabim Bambino group. You guys are awesome. Anything else you want to say before we pick up back next week? Imagine a world. Well, completely under ice again.
Completely under the rule of SGC's Game of the Year selection process.
We'll see you guys next week for way, way more genres. That'd be terrible, terrible deliberation.
Well, mild improvement.
Hell yeah.
We can't pick between these two guys, so let's make a booth leader.
We'll see you guys later. Good episode. Goodbye. Bye. We'll be right back.